Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. New York finally had an upturn. Ross checks out the U.S. dollar, gold, and crude. VRTrader.com publisher Mark Leibovitz tells us the third year of the presidential cycle traditionally has been good for the stock market. He weighs in on crypto, gold, and the war on cash. He also has a special offer for our listeners. RealEstate.com's Robert Campbell examines real estate in the U.S. and especially California. It seems people can't leave that state fast enough. Plus, at the end of the show, we'll have a company showcase update from Recyclico CEO Zarko Masalgia. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Recyclico, making lithium-ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and technical analysis. You can find him on Twitter at chartsbyross. Welcome back to the show, Ross.
It's good to be back with you, Jim.
Ross, the stock market seemed to have perked up after two or three dreary weeks.
It is just how we like to see these things happen. Everybody becomes lethargic and starts to think about, is the buy in October, November, and sell in May, has that run its course and we're all finished? But in this case, it looks like the planets and everything just aligned up perfectly during this week. The pullback in the equity markets produced some nice oversold signals within mildly rising trends, and that's what you like to see. Just markets that don't have too much enthusiasm, so when they start to turn, they catch people off guard, and you have the tail end of a week like we did this week. The S&P was an outside reversal week. It was a new low below the previous week, closed above the last week, so a nice reversal there. And same thing in the Dow, not as quite as bullish in the NASDAQ, but overall, just a nice way to finish off the week. And I think it should have some reasonable legs on the upside for the next couple of weeks here.
What's the picture on the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
Okay, so the U.S. dollar had been in a nice little bit of a rise off the bottom there for the last 3 weeks. Got ahead of itself. I think it was a week ago. We probably talked about how starting to get the first of sort of some mild overbought signals. And the dollar just eased back very, very marginally from 105 down to 104 and a change. But that pause has allowed some of the other markets to come back to life. And, we had probably the poorest of the bunch. We'll start off with that one, was the Canadian dollar. It on the week, around 78.17 at the close, didn't do too much. But the other currencies had a pretty good move. And if we take a look over at some of the commodities, like the precious metals, we had just perfect buy setups there as far as the gold and silver were concerned at the tail end of last week. Nice life on the upside this week. Gold up at 1869, up from 18 and a quarter. That's on the nearest futures. Similar to what we saw in the equity markets, that was an outside reversal week producing this pretty good rise as far as gold and silver is concerned. The miners participated in it as well. The best week we've had there. In a month and a half. So a decent turn off the low, and we're looking for this to probably continue for a little while now.
Anything happening with crude?
Yeah, crude, well, stuck still in that same trading range. It closed off the week at 79.68, but that's, you know, up 4% on the week. Not bad. It's still got that $80 to $82 level that produces some pretty big overhead resistance. Within the complex, though, you know, we've been looking for gasoline to be started up on its seasonal run, and it's showing good life, up 6% on the week. And the big one had been natural gas, one of the, I guess, the fifth or sixth best oversold or most oversold readings here a few weeks ago that we'd seen in the last two decades. So it was perfect setup for a reversal. And so a week ago was up 9%. This week it's up 16%. And just caught the turn nicely in here. Looking for, we're just over $3 at this point. Thinking $3.30 to $3.50 is a reasonable target. And, you know, the got to remember that gas is a widow maker. People who get a little too convinced that the next big run is coming have historically left a lot of money on the table. But for now, a move from the low twos to the mid threes, percentage-wise, is a pretty good trade for anybody who is nimble.
I was going to say, with all the snow from the Yukon down to San Diego, no wonder people cranked up the natural gas.
Yeah. I mean, here we are in Vancouver, and, you know, we got a snow warning for this weekend. Here we are coming into, you know, the early part of March. This is just not heard of here.
Ross, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Pleasure to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. Find him on Twitter at chartsbyross. Coming up, Mark Leibovit next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be back, Jim. Thanks for having me. And I'd like to make a disclosure that I am not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice, but we do publish VRTrader.com. That's the URL for Leibovit VR Newsletters, and we cover all the major markets with our newsletters.
Do you have a special offer this week for our listeners?
Let's keep it going. We have some interested people, and we might as well give them the benefit of the discount, which is 50% off of any of the newsletters using the promo code 2022HALFOFF. 2022HALFOFF. You put that in the promo code slot, and you get half off for any of our newsletters.
Do U.S. stock markets look like they're in a bull market?
Well, short term, it's starting to unfold that way. But, you know, the time frames for bull and bear markets now have been so compressed that, you know, you don't know, you know, as a trader, I don't really care. I mean, you know, if you can move a couple thousand points in the Dow up or down or the S&P up or down, you know, that's a bull and bear move as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you could argue that we've been in a bull market since the New York Stock Exchange started to trade under the buttonwood tree in the late 1700s. I mean, basically, it's been an upward pattern for, you know, over 200 years. We've had, you know, big shakeoffs, 20, 30, 40% corrections along the way, you know, all these crashes, but it's still been an overall upward inflationary-driven bull market. So if you live long enough, unless the country goes to hell and, you know, we turn into communist China, and even then it probably would be capitalistic since they like to make money, you know, and you can withstand it, you got a long time horizon, you're generally okay. I know people that just hold stocks and they weather the storms, and net-net, they've been ahead. They just, you know, had a ride through the big shakeouts. you know, most recently 2008-09 and the 2020 shakeout, we get these huge corrections. But yeah, I think you're focusing more on the short term. And, you know, this is the third year of the election cycle. And there's what is known as a four-year cycle in the market presidential cycle. And the third year historically has been a very good year for the stock market. Now, whether that's the case this year, time will tell. But generally, you know, you would expect to see some nice rallies during this year, if not net up by the end of the year, though we could get some, you know, violent downdrafts, I suppose, based on all kinds of geopolitical and geocosmic things out there. You know, for the bottom line, we had that January barometer we talked about. I didn't create it. It was my old buddy, who was 20 years older than me, Yale Hirsch, back in the 1970s, and he came up with the early warning system and the net for the month change against December, and he called it the January barometer. So if that January is net up, which it was, compared to the December close in the S&P, that tends to confirm a bull market, though you can get all kinds of shakes and rattles and rolls during the year. Nothing's perfect. It's not 100%, so you have that going for you. And, you know, everybody's thinking, you know, they're all looking at the Federal Reserve. I think that's the least of our problems, but they're all messed up. And they're doing all this kind of jawboning, I call it. I mean, I think it was on trading Thursday, one of the Fed officials out of Atlanta made some statement, which the market got all excited about, hinting that, you know, maybe the Fed will slow down sooner or they'll stop raising rates or reverse the rate pattern, which I don't think he said, but the market interpreted it that way. So, you know, the market got going, and we had some nice follow through in trading on Friday today. So, and in addition to all this, you know, we're in this March period, you know, the Ides of March, Julius Caesar, of course, most noted for that event, but also we have the vernal equinox coming around the 20th of the month. And, you know, we get change of directions many times around March. And most of them have been low points, but it could be, you know, maybe we've already hit a low point, or maybe we're going to rally now and hit a little top at the end of the month. So there's a lot of volatility attributed to the March period. But right now, the technicals, the last couple of days, you know, the way I track them with upside volume and so forth, indicated that we're at least in some type of short-term rally phase. And we have the full moon on March 7th coming up early next week. So that's another change of direction cyclical tool. So either that triggered a low here, or we're going to rally into the full moon early next week. So all these fun things are happening out there in terms of cycles, in terms of what we're doing this time of year. And my short-term answer would be we're in some type of short-term rally phase here. We're playing the long side, and we'll see how long it lasts. And if this was the big March turn that came early versus usually closer to the middle part of the month, then, you know, we could, you know, rally for a period of time here, and we'll just, you know, monitor it. But I don't think it's any straight-up affair. I don't think this is the third year of the presidential cycle where it's up and up all year long. I don't think it's that type of move. I think we're going to get, as I mentioned a moment ago, fits and starts. So it's a trader's paradise. But, you know, again, if you're a long-term investor, these are all irrelevant comments, because long-term, I mean, the Dow could be 50, 60,000, and, you know, S&P could be 5,500. And if you're patient and live long enough, you're going to see those numbers, just because of general inflation and the fact, no matter what the government tells us, they keep printing money.
How are Canadian markets looking?
They're tracking along. I mean, basically, the Dow and S&P go up, you're going to see a sympathetic move. It may not be as great, because the Canadian market is more, as you know, resource-based. So, you know, we'll see how much it can track, because if the dollar continues to rally, it had a correction here. It had a big move up, it pulled back, and it's starting to rally here a little bit. If it rallies again, which it tends to do under U.S. Democratic administrations, which is what we've had here, as you know. So I don't think the dollar really would turn down big until you know, we have a Republican administration in, which could happen in the next election cycle in 2024. But if the dollar, you know, rallies more here, that could put some pressure on, you know, commodity pricing, which could affect the Canadian market to a certain degree. But as a general rule, when the U.S. market's moving up, you know, rising tide carries all ships, so to speak. So, you know, there's a lot of other stocks in the Canadian market, as you know, besides resource stocks, you know, but other industries as well. Not everything is oil and timber and gold and silver. I mean, there's a lot of part of the Canadian market that's not. And that part, I suppose, would outperform if those commodity prices were put under pressure with a resumption of a rally in the U.S. dollar. So we'll see if that all ties in. You know, you can't just use one tool and say that's the end all. I mean, you know, we can see markets do what they want to do. You could see commodity prices go up, even if the dollar, you know, goes up. We've seen the rules broken any number of times, but that's sort of the general guideline. So let's see how it unfolds here, but I would give the Canadian market the benefit of the doubt if the U.S. market rallies, which for the year it should, based on the longer-term presidential cycle, the January barometer, and potential positive action on the part of the Federal Reserve.
Is there a secret war on cash?
You know, what's his name? Greg Smith. He's the owner or chief officer at Swiss America, which is a company actually based down here in Phoenix. They run ads all over. I watch Pat Boone, one of my favorite actors from my younger years, touting it, you know, the Swiss America company. I don't mean to give them an advertisement here, but Greg Smith wrote a book, War on Cash, and he's been promoting it for a number of years, and I guess that's true. I mean, if you read the book, you know, basically the government is trying to get rid of cash. They want to digitize the currency. You know, if you go to the bank and try to take in any amount of cash out of the bank or put any in, they have to report you. Depends on the amount and so forth. I remember when we had the financial crisis back in 2008-09, I ran to the bank and took out all my cash, and they were looking at me like crazy. I guess I must have gotten reported some level. I didn't, you know, I thought there was going to be the banks were going to close, and, you know, I was one of the run on the bank type people back then, and, so I got a bunch of cash out, I remember at the time, but now it seems to become even more not restrictive, but more monitoring of you. And, you know, the powers that be feel that they can't monitor your actions if you're dealing in cash. So they have to track you. And if they can't track you, normal means, and then maybe they're going to digitize the currency, which everybody says is inevitable. So all your money in the bank is going to be a digital currency, not real cash anymore. And the only way you can spend money is by, you know, using your computer or your phone to buy and sell things, and that way the government could track everything. So it seems like we are moving to the so-called secret war on cash, and just it's only because the government wants to control everything. So hopefully they don't succeed at it right away, or maybe they get derailed at some point, but that seems to be the objective.
What is the Fed likely to do when they meet later this month?
Raise rates. Mm-hmm. They're on a rate-raising campaign. The actual inflation rate has to match the Fed funds rate, and we're not there. I mean, where are we, 4.75, 5 in that area? The actual inflation is 6.67 area. So they have to raise rates to at least match the inflation rate. So if they do it quarter point at a time or get more aggressive, and if inflation suddenly took off even more, which Fed has no control over, you know, it has to do with supply chain, you know, potential wars, geocosmic climate issues, you know, all these natural disasters, and maybe man-made disasters like these railroad accidents that we keep hearing about. There was one, you know, just recently, I think in Florida, in addition to the big one in Ohio, and there was a big truck that blew up in Arizona that had poisonous chemicals on it. It's all these kind of things, you know, could create more inflation because of, you know, product shortages and all kinds of stuff. So that's the bottom line. You know, that's the best way I can answer that.
How's the U.S. dollar looking?
It should remain positive during a U.S. Democratic administration. I know it seems like a very general statement, but it has basically been in a big uptrend. Then in the last couple of months, we had a correction, and that now looks like it's trying to bottom here a little bit. But net-net, I would think until Republicans come in the U.S., which wouldn't be until early 2025, that you have to sort of count on a strong U.S. dollar, unless the temperature is such out there that everybody's convinced that the Republicans are coming in, the Democrats are out, and the dollar doesn't perform up to the minute, up to that political change time frame. So generally Republican administrations, you have down dollar and a Democratic up. So that's sort of the guideline. So I have to assume the dollar will remain strong. And then you think in terms of geopolitical. I mean, China-Taiwan situation, and Iran's about to get a nuclear bomb. Is Israel going to bomb the hell out of them and stop that situation? And what's happening with Ukraine? We know what's going on. We got the Democrats in the U.S. who are, I think, insane, who are sending weapons and fueling the fire over there. That's not conducive to peace, and they feel like they want to get rid of Putin, and Putin's not going to let that happen so fast. And the more they escalate, then there's that risk of a nuclear accident. And so, all those things sort of point to the dollar being strong, because money would flow into the U.S. for safety, or so-called safety. So despite the Democrat administration phenomenon, you've got the war scenario out there, and the fear of your country and your money being secure. So I would give the dollar the benefit of the doubt for that reason as well.
Your thoughts on gold?
I have mixed feelings about gold. The dollar remains strong. That's bad for gold. But there are times that gold can move with a strong dollar. I mean, if you chart this stuff for decades and look at the charts, there are exceptions. There's nothing concrete about it. So if gold takes out the recent double top high, which is the high, I think, from 2020 and the one we just had a few months ago, which is in that 2060, 2070 area, that's based in U.S. dollars, not in Canadian or other currency. You take that double top out, that's a big technical event. And that probably means we're going to move to we're going to go up. I mean, I don't know the exact number. You can speculate. Is it to 2,300, 2,500? Some of the bulls want 3,000. Others want 10,000. I don't think that'll happen so fast. But that's really the key. So until that happens, we could be churning around here. A strong dollar could, except for a little bounce here short term, let's say, gold could resume lower. And it won't turn for another year, a year and a half, and it might get down to $1,200, $1,300 an ounce, and silver back down to the $12 to $15 an ounce. And it could be a pretty negative scenario for the gold and silver bugs out there, with a strong dollar and the others. That's the alternate scenario. So it's like a flip of a coin here with gold. I mean, I think it will go up. It will take out that double top at some point. And more likely if a Republican administration is in the White House in the U.S., but it could happen, before that, and then you have to act technically. Now, if you're a long-termer, we were just talking a moment ago about the stock market. I mean, if you live long enough and you hold long enough, the trend is up, and gold overall, the trend will go higher. And if you hold coins and you're patient, at some point that double top will come out, whether it's this year or 2 years from now, and you'll see higher prices. So as a trader, to me, the gold and silver looked a little oversold here. We actually went long this week, despite the comment I just made, just for a trade in the gold and silver, because it just looked like it was too oversold and it's going to have a little technical bounce. But I don't know if this is going to go anywhere significantly or not. And we're nervous about being on the long side, except for a couple day trades there. So that's sort of the nutshell for me, trading it along the way and waiting for that big double top breakout to give the bulls the real kick that they're looking for.
Is silver going to act any differently than gold?
I think silver may do a little bit better. There's industrial uses for it and solar and all this fun stuff. There's a lot of silver health benefits too. I keep telling the old story, which surprises a lot of people. They don't know it. I mean, I heard this decades ago when I was a kid. Pioneers were crossing the West here in the U.S. I don't know if that happened in Canada or not, but they would put silver coins in the buckets of water that they carried on the covered wagons. And the silver would, you know, keep the water antiviral, antibacterial, keep the water healthy. So there's a medicinal, natural benefit to silver, which very few people really know about. So silver is actually sort of healthy, at least in that context. So, but there are a lot of industrial uses like the solar panels and other things. So, you know, I have sort of a gut feeling that silver might do better for industrial reasons on a relative basis than gold. You know, and we'll see if that unfolds. But they do obviously track together, and we'll just have to look at each stock and look at each market and see which one is showing the greater relative performance. But my bias would be I think I'd make more money in silver if there's a move than I will in gold.
What's happening in the energy markets?
Well, we had a nice correction in the oils, crude oil, and natural gas. And now we're starting, I still think we're coming out of this overall to the upside, you know, regardless of the dollar and the pricing, the inverse relationship of the dollar to crude oil. So I still think, you know, we need the crude oil. There's still limitations on its production. Putin's controlling all the oil out in his part of the world, and a lot of, he's got customers for his crude oil. I mean, Iran, India, I think, you know, other countries, you know, there's still a viable big market for crude oil out there, and there's big demand for it, despite what the green people want to do here in the U.S. And I guess to a certain degree in Europe. But I'm a big picture bull. I mean, I mentioned numbers like $200 to $400 a barrel in the years ahead, and I don't see why that couldn't happen. So yeah, and then now we have natural gas, which got really hit, and it seems to, on the charts, it looks like it's coming off a bottom here. You pull up a natural gas chart, it's so deeply oversold, even if you got a bear market rally in natural gas, there's some money to be made. So natural gas, ETFs, and there's a double and triple versions of that, which we cover in our newsletter. Those we're in those. We think natural gas could have more of a rally here, and whether crude oil has another little dip here or not, but I'm thinking, you know, $100 a barrel plus is not unreasonable in the next few months.
What's the latest on the battery metals sector?
I'm not up to speed so much on that. I mean, I'm bullish on lithium and palladium and platinum and all the components for the electric vehicle, because that only makes sense. That's where money is being spent, and that's what the governments are pushing us for. But I don't have, other than mentioning those names, I don't have much insight, though. We do like those metals that I just mentioned to you because of the craze for EVs that's, you know, dictated by the government.
Are cryptos risk on?
Yes. Love Bitcoin. They murdered it. They got everybody bearish, thinking it's going to go to zero, which they've done a couple times before, Jim. You know, they scared the dickens out of it. And wasn't too long ago here, last few weeks, Bitcoin was down around that 15,000 level, and they thought it was going to go to zero. Now it's in the mid-20s, rallied only $10,000. So I have a big number, and I could be dead wrong, but I think Bitcoin will be in the 80s, 80,000, 90,000 in the next couple of years. But it's a long-term hold, and the last time we've had shakes in it, it took a couple of years or more for it to regroup and come back. And I think one of the most bullish factors for it is the fact that even the Securities and Exchange Commission, I mentioned this, I think, last week, you know, officially designates Bitcoin as a commodity. So as a result of that, they're not, you know, they're not going after Bitcoin the way they're trying to go after these other cryptos and regulate them and so forth. So that keeps it open, you know. China sort of banned Bitcoin and then changed their mind, and it's used in the commerce. I think it's viable, and I think it's going to be around for a while, if not forever. And there's ways you can play it. You can buy, you know, there's an ETF on the NASDAQ here in the U.S. that tracks the Bitcoin, so you don't actually have to go out and deal with the complications of having wallets and all the technical hocus pocus that you have to go through to buy a cryptocurrency. You can just buy an ETF, and I would do that. That's the position we have. We actually have that in our theoretical model hypothetical portfolio for Bitcoin.
What sectors do you like as we head into spring?
I don't have any particular sector. I just think I'm following the markets here. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I like crude oil. I like that we mentioned the Bitcoin. I would just focus on energy, which I still think is strong, and the crypto, and maybe I sort of inferred it from a few moments ago, maybe silver for industrial reasons looks interesting. But there's, every day, as you know, there's another stock that's hot. There's one particular stock, AI, which is a reference of the whole AI concept. A lot of stocks now in that sector seem to be attracting investors. Artificial intelligence related stocks seem to be hot here. I don't have one on our list, and there's one that's been, it was up 5 points today, which was one of the hot names in the industry. There are probably others out there, so maybe AI has caught the imagination of investors. That might be something to take a look at because it's getting a lot of press attention. But I would be, just in the, for trading purposes, I'd be in the Dow or the S&P or the TSX for rally phase, and my emphasis would be personally, more toward the energy, crude oil, and Bitcoin, and maybe silver if I had to pick three favorite sectors. And then again, I do like some of those other metals that we mentioned, platinum, palladium, and so forth, because of their needs in the EV world. So that's sort of a general comment. You stick with the indexes and a couple hot areas like energy, and I think you can participate pretty nicely.
Your thoughts on real estate?
I love real estate. As the government gets its claws on your bank accounts and on cash and control, you want to be a physical asset. And, maybe gold is not the big place to be now, or maybe it is long term and my comment is irrelevant. But, if they're going to convert all your cash in the bank into some cryptocurrency, digital coin one day, and you lose, I guess you're not necessarily going to lose control of it, but, that's your war on cash that we just discussed a few moments ago. It's part of your portfolio. The government can't take the real estate from you and then turn it into a digital coin the way they can with your bank account. And they don't make any more of it. And we know China's buying farmland all over the U.S., maybe in Canada as well, though there's some politicians who want to change all that, but there's some politicians that don't, because there's money to be made selling the real estate to China. So mostly agricultural land. So foreign country like China wants to buy up our land. That tells you the story. You want to own real estate. Maybe we just buy more farmland and compete with them,
Using the old definition, does it look like the U.S. is already in recession?
Yeah, the technical terms say we're already in recession. But, for the people that are working in the job market, that doesn't appear to be the case, because the unemployment is at recent historical low levels. And it's frustrating for the Federal Reserve. It's funny because one of the edicts behind the creation of the Federal Reserve is full employment. And for the Fed to do anything to disturb that is even more reason for it to be abolished, which I've been talking and writing about for years and years. So if they're going to try to drive rates up and bring down full employment, they're violating the basis that they were created. And, that's really frustrating. So basically, we've got a lot of people working. And the technical numbers say that we're in a recession, but maybe it's a mild recession, or maybe the Fed's going to change its mind for political reasons. Maybe Jay Powell wants to keep his position, doesn't want to get kicked out as chairman of the Federal Reserve. And there has been some talk about changing or getting rid of the Federal Reserve. I've been ranting and raving about it, and I've heard some notable economists write about it that say they're not really doing their job, and a couple of congressmen are muttering about it. The Congress could abolish them. It was created in 1913, and they can get rid of it, which I think would be fantastic, because I think the free market should determine rates, not the Federal Reserve. They've done a terrible job of it.
Does it look like the globalists are winning or being exposed?
They're being exposed. I hope they get killed and get knocked out. you know, because what they're talking about is destruction of Western civilization. You know, the green movement, the woke movement, the one world government movement, Klaus Schwab. You won't own anything, but you'll be happy. You know, I think that they're on the road to destruction, and hopefully sooner rather than later. We got to get rid of the George Soroses of the world, and these people who are promoting that, along with Klaus Schwab and people that follow that methodology. Listen, China doesn't want that. China doesn't want to be one world. They want to control the world. Russia doesn't want to be part of any one world government or the world, what the World Economic Forum writes about at Davos. They got a tough battle because China and Russia don't want it, and there's a growing population here in the West. They're rejecting it. So I think they're going to lose.
Is the medical industry benefiting from experimental injection side effects?
You know, this is a whole other area which I've been anti-vax, anti-drugs for my entire life. I never took a vaccine except for a tetanus shot, whatever I needed to take. I just don't trust the allopathic route. That's just me, you know, for my entire life. I'm into alternate stuff. And now we find out that there's been a lot of misrepresentation about the production of the vaccines. And, you know, Jonas Salk was lucky that he got the polio vaccine through. If he lived today, it probably never would have happened. You know what I mean? He had a time where they didn't have all the controls and supervision and power that they have now. So, but a lot of bad people in the drug industry. I'm just doing my own research. I'm a reporter. I'm not a scientist. I am not a doctor, but yeah, I can read, and I can read the opinions of others who are much smarter than me. And, I think that, the vaccine has caused a lot of death and illness. It wasn't tested properly. It was rushed through or had a more, nefarious intention behind it, which we can have hours of discussion about, but I'm against it.
Is the election fraud takedown likely to start in Arizona?
I'm not up to speed on that one, Jim. I know it started here. There was some positive news regarding that. I don't want to get into politics too much here, but I questioned the authentic election results from day one. I just felt, you know, my gut feeling was that there was a lot of shenanigans around with the polling and the boxes and the equipment that was being used and so forth. But, you know, let's leave this to those who are more of an expert than myself.
Are the balloons likely from China? And if satellites actually exist, why the need for balloons?
Well, balloons, I have a little article in my newsletter. Apparently the military had put out notification about balloons several years ago about them using them. And, apparently it's fairly common. I mean, the one that crossed over the U.S., the Chinese balloon, I mean, there could have been other instances that we never heard about. I mean, just happened. This was given a lot of attention. I mean, there could have been balloons all over, and I mean, you and I or the press never reported it or got the information about them. So I don't know. My impression was they're common for scientific purposes or military purposes and been around a long time. My bigger concern is the UFOs and the unidentified submersible craft and all the other stuff that's being seen all over the planet right now. And despite we've had a long conversation here about a lot of subjects, to me the greatest story of our time is the technology that we're seeing in the skies that we can't explain. And that brings up a whole other subject of the space program, the U.S. Space Force that was created under Trump, the so-called secret space program that exists out there. So we can talk about all kinds of stuff. The balloon is the least of my concern. I just feel like we know the technology is out there because we're getting pictures of it, even from the military. So we know it's there. And the big tragedy is if that is something that we have control over or it's ours or we reverse engineered something, we should all be benefiting from that, and we're not. So if we actually, those are our craft up there, that we created a reverse engineer from alien craft or who knows where, you know, our lives literally could change overnight in terms of the benefits to civilization by taking that technology and applying it to our day-to-day existence. So that's the biggest tragedy of the whole thing, is that if they, and I suspect this is the case, the military does control some of that advanced technology. So again, the balloons are the least of our concern.
Do you think aliens are more likely real or myth?
Absolutely real. Absolutely real. Too many witnesses, too many encounters of all kinds for thousands of years. It goes back into all the ancient writings, the mythology of previous civilizations, seeing people from the sky coming down, helping them. It's in from Sumerian literature and walls and script to the Egyptians. I mean, the East Indian culture talks about flying machines and all kinds of stuff and wars in the sky. You know, what is all this? It's not. It crosses culture. It's the Native American pictographs. So yes, there's no question about others visiting the planet for thousands of years, not just since Roswell in 1947. So it's in the history of the world. So the question is, some people see it, some people don't. A lot of it, they're not necessarily visible to all of us. I'm definitely a believer. I've talked to too many people, gone to too many conferences, seen too much evidence in my 74 years here on Earth that tells me that they're here and have always been here. So I remember when I went to Ireland back in the 1970s, I was working on a film project with my brother, and one of the first things, I sat down in a bar and I asked these guys, do you believe in leprechauns? And boy, they were insulted. They said, absolutely, we believe in them, and we've seen them, and we know people that have seen them. So who are the leprechauns? Are they some subterranean life form that lives here in Ireland, or are they extraterrestrial? What are they? So right away, that tells me there's something here, because we can't explain it. Minute to minute doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And my belief is the answer is a big affirmative on this one.
What's happening with geocosmic events?
Well, I'm watching them every day. We got 47 active volcanoes on the planet now, Jim. I mean, you know, that's not something to ignore. And Mauna Loa out in Hawaii, and look at the terrible earthquake in Turkey. And there came, it was a second wave on earthquakes, and we've had a couple small meteorites or mini asteroids come through the sky here, which was a surprise. So this is a dynamic planet and a dynamic universe. So you can't control it. We watch it. The solar flares keep, you know, peaking and then subduing, and one of them is going to really blast off there, and you know, could fry us at some point. It happened before in that Carrington event in the 1870s or 1860s. So, yeah, got to watch it all. But, you know, if you're in the middle of Turkey and that earthquake hits, you have no control of it, you know. So this is the planet we live on. So we watch it. But the bigger problem is if one of them gets big enough, like a super volcano, then it changes the planet. I mean, it covers the skies with gray. The sun can't pass through. Crops have difficulty in growing. You know, this is the history of the planet, where we can get these, you know, talk about climate change. I mean, you know, you get one of these events, that's the king of them all. So it could happen at any moment. We're very vulnerable, and I guess you got to appreciate every day and realize that it's outside of our control. That's the nature of Mother Earth.
Yeah, the so-called Carrington event happened in 1859, and it fried telegraph lines around the world. They were the only electronic equipment around. Imagine today if we had a giant solar flare like that.
Right, and there's a spaceweather.com. You can go to the website, spaceweather.com, and there's also another one that NASA puts out, and they track every solar flare. They track you know, all the little sunspots, big sunspots on the sun, and how they rotate, and they interfere with electromagnetic, instruments. It almost every few weeks you hear reports that shortwave radio has been cut out because of flare flare, this flare is coming out of the sun. And, you know, one of them, as you just said, could be so big that it could just wipe us out technologically until we can repair it. So, yep, you don't know when it's going to happen, but, there's flares every day. So, you can't sit here worrying about it. I suppose you could try to protect your equipment and stuff just in case there's a big flare. But if it's as big as Carrington, there go your satellites and all your other communication vehicles.
Mark, where can people find out more about your special offer?
Go to VRTrader.com, which is a shortcut for my Leibovitz VR newsletters. And you can, again, apply that promo code if you're interested. I hope you do. In subscribing, 2022 half off. But as you can see, we cover a lot of stuff in the newsletter. A lot of stuff we talked about here today is in the newsletter, from the geocosmic to the short-term stock market movements, because I feel they're all related. We live in a complicated world, and it's not just earnings reports or daily stock prices that affect our lives and affect directions. You got to be aware of other forces that are out there, like the cycles that we've just talked about. So thank you for mentioning it.
Mark, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitz. He was speaking to us from Arizona. Coming up, Robert Campbell, next on This Week in Money.
Recyclical, making lithium-ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium-ion last forever.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Robert Campbell, author of Timing the Real Estate Market and the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter. You can find him online at realestatetiming.com. He's speaking to us from, well, for a minute or two, snowy San Diego. Bob, welcome back to This Week in Money.
Thanks, Jim.
How bad was the
snow? Guys, it was only hailing, and it was a very light hail. But for us down here in SoCal Beach, that's totally unacceptable.
When's the next issue of the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter coming out?
I'm working on it right now. It'll be out on or before March 15th, 2023. It's 10 pages. I publish it once every 2 months. And it is, I've been publishing it for 23 years now. So I'm one of those instant success guys. How long did it take you to get successful? Like 20 years? No kidding? Nah, no kidding.
Your book, Timing the Real Estate Market, is it still as valid today as the day you put it out?
Yes, it is. It still is valid. In fact, there's five key indicators that I identify. And it's I still use those five key indicators today. I've in my real estate timing model, and for those of you that want to know what they are existing home sales, number one, number two, new home building permits, number three, mortgage defaults, number four, foreclosure sales, and number five, mortgage rates. And I show you how to find that data, use it, put it together in a model, and create your own real estate timing model for whatever city in the world you live in, as long as there's over 1 million people in it.
Well, that's interesting. What's happening?
It has to be a large sample size, right?
Right, exactly. So what's going on?
You can't go to Chico, California. Nothing against Chico, but...
So what's going on with the housing market?
Housing market in the United States, we hit a peak. And this isn't just 2020. We hit a peak about, the middle of last year, like June 2022. I called the top for my followers, that we had a build up to it, you know, and I said, hey, this thing's getting scary, guys. You know, you might want to hold on. And I think I got everybody out of the market that, relatively at or near the top, because we'd all made so much money in the market. I mean, you don't want to screw around with it. You got a big profit, take it. Don't sit there and go, it already gone up too fast, too much. So I got my followers out of the market, and there's been in my timing letter, I use either a bull or a bear in the final words to tell them what the trend of the market is. And I think I went from a bull to neutral about the middle of the year, about June. Then I went to a bear like 2 months thereafter, and a bear's been in there ever since, and will be in this issue too. So now, risk in 99% of all places here in the United States, major cities, risk outweighs any potential future benefit.
In real estate busts, historically, does high-end real estate cause a trickle-down effect?
I can speak very confidently about California, because I've seen the cycles, because we develop the homes from low tier, mid tier to high tier. It's usually the low end of the market, one, is most responsive to upturns, and equally so, it's most responsive to downturns. So I know it's everybody says, oh, the high end leads. It doesn't. The low end leads. I mean, that's what the data shows. I mean, and as far as volatility goes, which is more volatile? Low-end houses from peak to bottom and bottom to peak, you know, what numbers are going to be bigger, for the low-end houses or the high-end? The low-end. So the high-end's not as volatile. That's really interesting. It all goes up and down together. But, you know, the high-end doesn't the bottom doesn't drop out of it, you know, quite like the low-end market does. And I think probably the primary reason is a lot of the low-end market is rentals, you know, and investors are the first to bail out, you know, as opposed to a homeowner. So that may explain that, why the low-end is more volatile. The low-end is leads the high-end down. First the low-end, and you know what, and it's more volatile. It goes up and down more than the high-end. So in other words, what you want to do at the bottom of the cycle is you want to buy a low-end rental and ride it to the peak and then sell it, because you're going to get more bang for your buck than you would a high-end property during the cycle. So maybe that helps. Mm.
Is real estate cyclical?
Absolutely. Everything in life is cyclical, but especially real estate. And you can prove it to yourself. Just look at a long-term chart of housing prices, like in the United States, for example, you know, going back to the 70s, adjust it for inflation so you can see the cycles more clearly. Because a lot of, you know, most of this rise in real estate prices, it's all inflation, guys. You know, it's just, it's everything's inflated. So when you take inflation out, then the cycles become clearly more prominent. And it's important to take the cycles out anyway, because it's, you know, that how you get ahead financially is you increase the purchasing power of your money. And, you know, with inflation, you lose purchasing power. So but it's absolutely cyclical. And that's why long term it's fairly easy to predict, you know, how far housing prices are going to fall, because they revert, you know, consistently revert to a long term mean before they find a bottom, and then they start rising again. It's really interesting stuff, guys. I find this stuff fascinating. It's like I'm a scientist on real estate economics.
Are people still leaving California?
Yeah, they are. They sure are. Last year, I understand that our net population, in migration, subtracting from out migration, we lost 500,000 people. And I would think they're from all walks of life. I think Elon Musk is considering pulling out of California and going to Texas or something like that. And it's a couple of things. It's taxes. It's a very expensive place to live. And there's a far left woke rhetoric that a lot of people don't like. You know, I mean, we're the socialist state that, you know, we're almost pure socialism. That's where they want us to go nowadays. And I'll say a lot of boomers are leaving California for economic reasons, is they can sell their house in their median size, you know, $900,000 house in California, and move to Arizona and replace it, the same thing, with a $300,000 house. Now they have $600,000 left over to live on. Because I have a lot of my subscribers are real estate agents here in San Diego, and I said the move-up buyer is rare, where they sell their home in San Diego and buy a more expensive house. When they sell their home in San Diego, 90% of them are moving out of state. So and I believe them. I had no reason to disbelieve them. You know, we share the truth with each other. So they are getting out of here, either for financial reasons or they just don't like the political climate here. I can put up with a lot of the political climate, guys, because I live a mile from the beach, and I love the beach. And I grew up here, and I'm not leaving. So the world can be pretty good if you live next to a nice beach somewhere. You put up with a lot of other crap.
Where do you think interest rates and mortgage rates are headed short and long term?
Short term, they're going higher, and I say that with a high degree of confidence. There's a price pattern I use. That tends to be like 80% accurate, and we just got an indication with that chart pattern that things are going higher, and I live by it. I use that same chart pattern, guys. It's called a 1-2-3 high, 1-2-3 low to call the bottom. I mean to call the start of the rise in mortgage rates back in whenever that was in 2022 sometime, when they were like 3.2%, I said rates are going up, and they're going up a lot, and they went up to 7%. So that one indicator works really well, you know, in identifying. So that same chart pattern just occurred in the last week or two. So I anticipate that things are going higher. And long term, I have no idea. I think interest rates are going to go higher and stay higher. Inflation isn't going away. It is not going away. So we're going to see inflation for an extended period of time. Therefore, we're going to see, high interest rates for an extended period of time because there's no choice for longer than they want. So all in all, I expect mortgage rates to go higher.
What are you seeing ahead for inflation?
I see inflation going higher. I mean, if you look at the patterns of the here in the United States, like during the 40s and 50s and during the 70s, inflation moves in waves. It moves in waves, so that all of a sudden it goes for a short term. Then it starts coming down. Everybody gets excited. Then it goes up and takes out the old high. Then everybody gets depressed. Then it comes down and everybody gets excited again, but it doesn't take out the old low, previous low. Then it goes to new highs again. That's a pattern that you can look at and see, and I can understand why that happens. So I anticipate, you know, something similar to that's going to happen this time. Inflation's going to go higher. And plus, really, there's no reason fundamentally why it shouldn't go higher, because the U.S. government, you know, when you really look at the financial deficit they're running every year, it's about $3 trillion, not a trillion and a half, because there's a trillion and a half worth of off-balance sheet numbers that need to be included in, that we're going to run a $2 or $3 trillion deficit from now until forever. And all that's going to be printed money, guys. The Fed has no choice but to print it. I mean, for one thing, and pretty soon, right now, that maybe 3 or 4 years ago, debt servicing on the national debt at a much lower level, like $20 trillion or something, was only $250 billion a year. Now we're up to $32 trillion, and interest rates that are more than double, we're closing in on almost $1 trillion a year on debt servicing, guys, which is as much or more than we pay for defense. So pretty soon the Federal Reserve is going to have to start printing money just to cover the servicing on the debt. Then what happens next? We turn into Venezuela.
What are zombie companies, and should we be afraid?
Well, what zombie companies are, that's a very catchy word that people use because of the almost zero interest rate where businesses could borrow money. The cost of capital was almost zero. So people come in business on things because the debts and finance it, and the debt servicing was so low, almost any business idea made financial sense. But all of a sudden, interest rates come back to normal or even more. Those companies that were marginal at best from the get-go are bankrupt now, and they're zombie companies. In other words, they can only operate when interest rates are at or near zero. Dead. So they got the name zombie. And should you be afraid of them? No. The only reason to be afraid of them is if you own one. That, you know, you need a 2 or 3% debt servicing to make your business work. Now it goes up to normal, you know, like triple that. Most of these guys are out of business because most of it's borrowed money. You know, all these guys are borrowing like crazy because that's the way you make money too, with cheap money. You borrow, you leverage cheap money. Yeah, that's all great as long as it stays cheap and the economy doesn't fall apart. But as soon as mortgage rates go up, you're done. You can't even service your debt anymore.
Could the push for World War III be a monetary thing?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think so. It just appears to me that these knuckleheads are so imbalanced as far as what they want to do. You know, that create a war with Russia, start World War III. And the reason I think that this may be the underlying plan is that servicing all this sovereign debt, both Europe and the United States, with rising interest rates, is going to become a disaster. Because, like I said before, everybody's going to have to start printing money just to cover the debt. Just to cover the debt. I mean, to service the debt. And so, and nobody wants it at that point in time. The only body that's left to buy it is the central banks. They're going to buy the whole thing, you know, with printed money. Inflation's going to roar, and interest rates, and you're going to get what? 3% on a 30-year government bond. Nobody's going to do that. So that's when everybody defaults on the debt. And I think they want to create something new for us.
Are schools teaching the basics?
No, they're not. I'm 75 years old, so I'm old school, right? You know, in so many ways. You know, I'm from an old school family, construction family. My dad was a Marine. He fought in Okinawa, World War II. You know, I was in the Air Force during the Vietnam War. So I'm really old school about all this. And I think that if we get into a war situation, we're going to, I think, which is going to be highly, even more inflationary than it is now, that certain assets like gold gold and silver are going to outperform by a mile, even commodities.
Would you rather be street smart or book smart?
Street smart. Street smart, everybody. Everybody, I read a statistic. I graduated from UCLA in 1969. I saw a chart plotted average grade point average for Harvard University. 1970, the average grade point average was 3.0. It sounds about right. Fast forward to 2022, it's 3.8. In other words, they're all geniuses. That ain't true. Talk about inflation. There is so much inflation in grade point averages all the way around because let's say something like Harvard, you have to pay $100,000 a year to attend Harvard. You think they're going to flunk you out because you're a dummy? No. That'd be biting the hand that feeds them. So everything's inflated. So now all of a sudden you come through Harvard. I mean, let's say you come through any school. You come through a good school. You come through UCLA with a 3.8 grade point average. Do you know what that says about your ability? At best, it shows that you're textbook smart. And you're probably not even that. They're probably giving you a grade well above what you deserve, that you're textbook smart. Is that textbook smart gonna get you far in the real world by itself, being book smart? No, it's not. It isn't, guys. You got to get out there in the real world, and you'd rather be street smart, and that's what you learn. I have nothing against universities. You know, I graduated with a degree in economics, and I still use it today, and it's a fascination to me. But compared to what that's like, school smart versus street smart, street smart is way more important. Way more important. That's what enables you to survive in this world. You know, you've got the bruises. You've earned the respect, and because that's the only way you're going to do it. You know, the School of Hard Knocks is the best education in the world. Not a degree from Harvard or UCLA.
What are your thoughts on the success of Elon Musk?
I really like the guy. He makes me laugh. And because humor has been outlawed now, you can't even be funny anymore. I really like the guy. I think he is one reason. Not only like him because of his humor, and he's smart. He's very smart. He actually makes things, guys. He's kind of like Steve Jobs. He made a Apple phone. He made a computer. You know, he made iPods and all those kind of things. But Elon Musk, what's he made? Electric cars and rocket ships versus everybody financially engineering something, you know, creating these values, you know, through leverage and hocus pocus that can't be maintained. They get dumped on the public, be it real estate or stocks, and they walk away smelling like a rose and because they get bailed out, if they were to fail, not like the unlucky guy. These guys make something. He owns a company that sends rockets into space. I'm impressed with the guy. I really am. I think he's very good for America, and I think he's an old school soul. You know, old school soul, just like me.
Is a sense of humor becoming rare?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I grew up in the days of Johnny Carson. You don't have talk shows like that anymore. That Johnny Carson, you know, he would. Some politician would screw up. They'd make fun of it. And did it matter if he was a Republican or Democrat? Didn't make her one bit iota. Nothing. It's just humor. Now you can't talk about that. Now you can't talk about that stuff. You can't laugh. You can't laugh about yourself anymore or other people. You can't make fun of people because they get offended. So I'm a real sense of humor guy. I found out a long time ago that I don't care who you are, how smart you are, how good you look. The best way to a woman's heart is make her laugh. And so I developed that skill. It's kind of a natural skill, actually, because I do like to have fun. It keeps you young, too, guys. Laughing keeps you young. You got to laugh, you know? I mean, is life serious? Absolutely. But you got to laugh. That's what makes it fun, you know?
I think that's what got the Brits through the blitz on London. They still kept their sense of humor through it all.
I didn't know that, but that very well could be true. Right. You know, you got to. And see, I know, humor isn't it? It keeps you young, it keeps you involved, and it just lightens everything up. But that, you know, you got to be careful nowadays. Everybody's so sensitive about everything. I asked a friend of mine, I said, if I went back to UCLA today and spent a week compared to when I was there 50 years ago, I said, would I recognize it? He said, no. And I was a fraternity guy. I mean, don't fraternity guys still like party and laugh and drink all the time? I mean, or they've been ostracized too.
Is life a game?
Life is a game. It's all a game, guys. It's all a game. And I mean a game in a very, very positive way. There's competition, and the people that are skilled at playing the game are the ones that do well, you know? So whether it's picking a spouse, whether it's what business to get into, whether it's when to buy and when to sell real estate, it's all a game. And the people that do the best are know how to play the game the best.
What do you have for us on health and fitness?
Health and fitness. What I'd like to share with you guys this time is something I've been doing. I hired a trainer. I don't know if I've mentioned that before, but we're doing core training workouts, where you go from one thing to another thing, and everything's fast. And that one of the things I'm doing is I started sprinting, and I'm doing burpees, which are what Marines do. I'm the only guy in the gym that does burpees. And, you know, going up and down stairs, ball slams. I'm doing things, guys, that are as much cardio as they are strength. You got to have a healthy heart. I am strong, but do I need to do bench presses to get, you know, stronger there? No. The thing is to get your heart beat up to a point where you feel like you're almost going to have a heart attack. Not quite that bad. But when I finish sprinting, going as hard as you can, I have to go to put my hands on my knees to catch my breath. And so why am I doing sprinting? Because it's all lower body exercise. Lower body. And I'll tell you guys, that is the most important part of your body. When you do lower body, it's your legs, it's your gut, it's your hips and all that in it. That's what keeps you that's what keeps you super, super healthy. It's not as much doing, you know, military presses, bench presses, you know, squats and all that kind of thing. It keeps your lower body really, really strong. And that's the secret of good health, everybody. It's lower body strength. Those are the things you gotta, those are the things you gotta focus on. And you want to be doing those lower body strength. What I'm doing today is I'm actually sweating during those things. When I lift weights, I don't sweat. But all of a sudden, I sprint as hard as I can, carrying some weight, and do that three sets of like 50 yards. I am, the sweat's pouring off of me. So you know you're working. And so that don't discount that you know, that you should be, if you're really working out hard, you should be sweating. Like if you walk 4 miles a day, you're going to sweat? No. Like, if you go out and do, you know, sprint for 20 seconds and then rest for 40 seconds before you sprint for 20 seconds again, do 15 reps of those, well, you'll be sweating? Yeah, you'll be sweating. You'll be gassed. And you can do a body workout like that in 20 minutes, and you'll stay in great shape. That's the most exhausting thing I do, everybody, sprint. And it's the best. It's a full body work. It's mainly because there's not one part of your lower body that isn't strengthened by sprinting. Your feet, your toes, your ankles, your calves, your quads, your butt, and your gut. They all come into play. And you're just pushing as hard as you can. So I found it one of the best ways to stay lean. Is it work? Yeah, it's a lot of work. So for you guys that really want to, you know, climb the mountain to the pinnacle, I highly recommend sprinting. Also, if for some reason you can't do sprinting, there's these, what they're called, air bikes that you can use, that will almost achieve the same thing. You're not actually running, but you're on a bike where you're interval training on and off, and you can get one of those for like, you know, $500 to $1,000, depending on what you want. But it's when me, my cardio, I like my cardio to be outside, mainly because I'm in Southern California. I'm not going to sit in a gym and ride a bike. I'm not going to do it. I'd rather go out, you know, run at the beach, run on the football field or something. But lower body, focus on lower body, guys. It'll like any part of good health, that'll really change your life. Now you're strong. Now, because the thing you want in life, okay, let's talk ideally, okay? Because I know I'm kind of extreme about this. Ideally, you want to be lean, you want to be strong, and you want to be fast. There's nothing in life that speed hurts you. Any pro athlete will tell you, is speed an asset? Yeah, it's a huge asset. So you want to be fast, so that's why you're sprinting. You can still move. Yeah, are you going to break any world records? No, but for your age, you can still move. It's all relative. You're not going to be racing. You're not going to be, you know, trying to outrace guys that are 20 years old. You're going to be out trying to outrace guys that are 65 years old. And believe me, it's not that hard once you learn how to do it. So I've just gotten really excited about this new way of working out, especially as I get older. And for those of you who don't know, I'll be 76 in 3 months. I'm doing some amazing things for a 76-year-old guy. You know, and kids, there's no limit to what you can do. No limit. You just go for it. And I've got the time, and I've got the money, and I've got the desire to do it. And it's really, really interesting. Good health should be the most important investment in your life, guys. Then work on money. You know, a doctor friend of mine told me. He goes. No, I think it was Confucius. He said, a rich man wants 100 things. A man in poor health, only one. And it's true. So you got to take care of your health.
So what do you have to do to be lean, strong, and fast?
Oh, my God. Okay, you got to eat right, you got to eat less, and you got to exercise.
That simple.
that's the blueprint right there. And you know what? I used to charge guys $95. People ask me that question all the time, Jim. And I'd say, look, I'm going to charge you $95 because if I tell you how to do it, because I walk the walk. People want to know. I said, I walk the walk. They said, if you want to know, you got to give me $95. And so they give me $95, you know. And I say, I look at them and say, okay, here it is. Got to eat right, eat less, and work out. And they look at me, and their eyes start rolling from side to side. They go, is there a plan B?
Everybody's still hoping for that magic pill that makes you fit, slim, and younger.
Everybody needs a pill. You know what, guys? There is no pill. It's work.
Yeah.
And you got to want it. And that's what's so amazing. The guys you know at the gym, they've been working out for 20, 25, you know, years, and we all get to know each other. Hey, we all want it. We're all in good shape. We all encourage each other. That's a fairly rare club. That isn't a big club, Jim. Because it's all based on consistency, guys. It's consistency. anybody can get their fire lit and get motivated for a month or two. Now you got to do it for the rest of your life. This isn't a one-time thing. It's like all these people that lose weight. You know, all of a sudden, I lost, these people that they're on TV and they win a contest where they lost the most weight. At the end of the year, there's never a get-together of all the people that lost all that weight and won a prize, right? Because there are none of them. They've all gained it all back. I mean, it's hard, but it's a magnificent journey once you get into it. And one thing sprinting does something for you that no other exercise does. It sends off these, what are they called, endorphins. You get high. They're like a natural high, guys, as soon as you finish it. And I've never experienced that except for sprinting. You're so exhausted. You're exhausted, but it feels good. So that's my new drug. I gave up cocaine and started sprinting.
How can people find out more about your book and newsletter?
By the way, guys, I'm just goofing you about that cocaine. They can go to my website, realestatetiming.com, and real estate, just like it sounds, and they can see what I do.
Robert, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you, Jim. Bye.
My guest has been Robert Campbell, publisher of the realestatetiming.com newsletter. He was speaking to us from San Diego. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Mark Leibovit, and Robert Campbell. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Now stand by for a company showcase update from Zarco Misalgia, CEO of Recyclico. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen. Welcome to Company Showcase, an advertising feature on HowStreet.com.
I'm Jim Goddard. I'm speaking with Zarco Misalgia, the CEO of Recyclico. Welcome back to Company Showcase.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Zarco, you were in Phoenix. What was going on there?
That was the NatBat annual conference where, many companies from the battery industry came together, including recycling, different battery technologies. We got an opportunity there to present on Recyclico and the progress we've made with our technology. It was a sold out show. I think over 600 people attended, and it was just great connecting with some of these different groups that, we're mostly having these, online conversations together with, but getting a lot more done there in these in-person meetings as well, when we're together at these events. But, now that we're back, I think the big highlight of the week, in the industry was really Tesla's Investor Day, because, I think no matter what you think about Tesla, they're really the company that's brought this whole industry to the scale it is at and created all this competitive tension with other automotive companies. And they've inspired so many other people to work on innovations in, manufacturing, battery technologies, AI, and even battery recycling. And, a few notes I took from that Investor Day or their master plan part three is the continuous improvement they're doing to drive all in costs down. And they're really great at breaking the mold and making what everybody thought the impossible possible. For their plans and to shift the world to sustainable energy, we really need to solve the world's material supply challenge. And I think that bottleneck is going to be getting mines online fast enough and increasing their refining capacity to make these battery materials, right? Because they state to get to 100% electrification, we're going to need to get to 240 terawatt hours of storage. And just a quick back of the napkin calculation from, we'll quickly show you that we'll need a whole lot more lithium, nickel, manganese, and cobalt than what we have today. In production. And, you know, I don't believe we'll be able to mine for all of these materials. And it just really tells me how key of a role recycling is going to be playing in shifting the world to sustainable energy and, you know, supplying future battery production. But, and moving on from there, you know, we do have a busy week ahead. We are preparing for a trip to Korea, where we'll be attending the Interbattery Conference as well. We have a full week of meetings and we'll be going on some site visits. So, like I said, with the kind of world opening up and business travel, you know, increasing, it's getting out there in person, is, you know, does wonders. And I think even for visitors to our demonstration plant, kind of really, you know, you get to touch and feel and really shows what our demonstration plant is all about and, you know, what we've been able to achieve. And regarding, you know, the demonstration plant, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, we do continue, and send our upcycled materials to third parties for analysis and electrochemical testing. And these are all really important steps in, you know, analyzing the material, qualifying that product and, you know, looking at what could be done on larger scales as well, right? And this is all, we're also, you know, along with the, preparing engineering data and designs for commercial scale up plans. Like I said, these are key steps to developing commercial scale up projects with top companies. And it really, I think, demonstrates our know-how in this space and with that technology. And I think that commands a level of respect, especially when, you know, individuals come and see the real work and data that's been put in over the years. You know, that's really a strong indication. And I'm really confident with, kind of what we have coming ahead and, the continued development of the recyclable technology.
Zarco, for people new to the company, what is Recyclico all about?
So Recyclico is a lithium ion battery recycler and upcycler. So take lithium ion battery waste and create battery ready materials such as lithium hydroxide or lithium carbonate, and as well as precursor cathode active materials. And these materials are ones that have also been made into new battery cells for testing and to show, you know, to complete full circularity of that supply chain of battery materials.
And where are you traded and how can people get more information about Recyclico?
So we are traded on the TSXV under the ticker symbol AMY, on the OTCQB under AMYZF, and the Frankfurt Stock Exchange under ID4. And you can get more information on our website, www.recyclico.com.
Zarco, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Zarco Masalja. He's the CEO of Recyclico. I'm Jim Goddard. Our conversation took place on March 3rd.
Comments made on Company Showcase are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at HowStreet.com. Company Showcase is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.